welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today, we're in the southwest. We are in Bristol, linking up with a man who 12 years ago had a big dream, a vision on how to bring a slice of the ocean inland for more people to access it. The question being, can he, or we, as he describes, inspire a love for the sea and surfing for those in geographically, economically, and culturally cut off from it? Today, I'm joined by the founder and a man living proof of blue health therapy, Nick Hounsfield. Welcome.
Thank you.
To the Monday Mile podcast.
Yeah, great to be here.
Now, this is quite surreal for me because I've been lucky enough to come and surf here a few times.
Yeah.
We've had the occasional chin wag, but I've never spent, other than a quick car ride to the train station, a considerable amount of time with you. I know right now, even this very track we're walking on has a story.
Yeah, everything has got a story. Yeah.
So tell me.
My background's actually in healthcare, so I've worked as an osteopath for about 18 years. Lived here in Bristol, very happy life, and I've been a surfer for 46 years, and just trying to disappear to the coast whenever I could. But as family life started to get in the way, and got young kids, couldn't always just disappear off for a surf, I started to sort of think about how we could change that. How could I access sort of blue health, being in and around blue water, for my own sanity, really? I guess in 2010, unfortunately, my dad died pretty tragically. I guess that was the sort of moment in time where I suddenly went, actually, that vision of what I want to achieve, I need to just pull my finger out and do that. But mainly to look at the health and benefits of surfing, being in and around water, and being able to bring that, maximize that for the greatest number of people. It became a sort of legacy in my dad's honor, but equally something that I just knew instinctively that the patients that I was seeing every day, they were coming to me because they had physical health issues and mental health issues attached to not being outdoors, not exercising well, not eating well, and that lack of connection to each other and to the planet. So it's like, well, if we wrap that all together, then I think that's a really compelling reason to build something pretty audacious.
You are literally, physically living proof of that legacy in honor of your dad. What you have founded is literally that of dreams.
Yeah.
For those that love adrenaline sports, being outside, we are currently on the pathway to paradise.
Yeah, it's like a little oasis, a little mecca that we've created.
How did you take that dream and make it a reality? Because it's easier said than done, I can imagine.
Yeah, it is. The main thing is having a very, very clear understanding of the end goal, the vision, like what it could look like, what it could feel like, what it could smell like, everything. Having a really, really compelling reason as to why you're wanting to do that. But then pulling a team together that can actually make it happen. I honestly would say I'm a jack of all trades. What I can do is pull amazing people together. I'm good at connecting people and finding great people to work with. So what I was able to do is pull together an incredible team that could actually bring all of the sort of special sauce we needed to create this place. So people are really good at finances, really good at planning, really good at architecture, really good at wave technology. So pulling together an amazing team that can help me do that. But ultimately, always comes back to that compelling vision as to why would people want to. Right at the beginning, I had no money. So I was asking people to just do it pro bono, or put some time on the clock to help me. You could only do that if you had a really, really compelling vision as to why they should get involved and be part of something that feels like it's groundbreaking. Because people, it's so attractive, and people just like magnetize towards it, and then will help you get to build a dream.
It is the perfect word, groundbreaking. As you were speaking, I'm literally thinking, you're doing something so far from the ordinary. When it came to stepping away from your past life as an osteo, were you fearful of it not working out? A lot could have gone wrong.
Yeah, I guess it's that balance of maybe it's just something that is inherently, I was born with, being allowed, middle son with two sisters. I was the one that was always taking the risk. I love adrenaline sports. And I think you need that sort of mentality a bit to be able to achieve what feels like the impossible, or to really sort of break down boundaries. You'll know from, from what you've done in the past, is that it's a certain mindset that you have where you don't mind taking risks. There's still calculated risks.
Yeah.
But you're probably happy to push that boundary more than most. Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful word, calculated risk, and it's something that I refer to many a times. When people look at my career as a snowboarder, they go, oh, you're crazy. You know, you just throw yourself upside down twice. I'm like, well, actually, it's risk assessed and it's calculated. Yeah. And it's taken years for me to get to the point where I go, actually, I can do that. Instead of it being a meter, I'm going to do that same trick over 15 meters.
Yeah.
And it's gradual growth.
Yeah.
Would you say the process in building something like this was gradual, or was it all in?
It was all in terms of psychologically in my mind. I had to make that flip to, well, it's two things. It's like, for my mind, I had to flip into something so I could give my all into something. But
it's
also,
it's like driving yourself into a certain gear.
Yeah, exactly. And then also then when you start getting investors coming on board and wanting to help you, you actually owe it to them to be all in as well. They don't want somebody who's moonlighting, doing a little bit of osteopathy and treating patients and trying to get a project off the ground. They want to know that you're fully committed. They're backing a lot of risk money into building something. So you need to show that absolute determination to get it done.
So in essence, you have bought the sea inland. Currently, we've just walked, how long is this path?
It's about 800 metres.
We've walked an 800 metre track.
Yeah.
And we are approaching what I would like to describe as inland sea.
Yeah, it is.
So
yeah.
When it comes to health benefits, you mentioned the word blue health. For those that don't know, what is Blue Health?
Blue Health is a sort of growing body of research. It's a sort of started off as a philosophy, but actually is now sort of science-backed around how being in and around water, particularly waves here, but being in and around water is fundamentally really good for your physical health, getting into the water and exercising in it, but also mentally, the mental stimulation, but also the calming and relaxation that comes, that sort of ebb and flow of being in and around water and how that can be very healing for your physical and mental well-being. So it's this growing body research that, you know, absolutely you can see it happening all day, every day here at The Wave, and something that we want to have conversation about so that people can understand why being in and around these spaces are so inherently good for you.
So we've just entered, is it the clubhouse?
Yes, it's our clubhouse,
Nice. Yeah. We are on our way to, quite literally, you see the water and your eyes light up. And also hearing the sounds lifts you.
Yeah.
I've just got out of the car from London, 2-hour drive, and it's an instant escape from the concrete jungle.
Yeah, quite often I just sit here by the entrance when you first come into the lake and just watch people's reaction when they've come here for the first time. It is generally going, oh my goodness, wow, I was not expecting this. So great to see.
It must be so fulfilling as the founder to see people's reactions and hear the stories of how it's positively impacted them.
100%, yeah. A lot of people message me on social media and stuff saying, in fact, we had one yesterday, so nice. This guy missed his flight in Bristol from Bristol Airport, came here, thought I'm just going to sneak in a little session before I go away on holiday, and came for a session here, met this lovely woman and just said, I've just got married to her 6 weeks ago.
No.
It was so cool.
No.
So yeah,
way.
So it's like
matchmaking.
It's like a blue Tinder.
Surf matchmaking.
Yeah.
Is that an official thing you can do here?
I think it's not the first time that's happened.
Maybe I should come more often.
There we go.
Do you think I could meet my surf sensei?
That might be the lifeguard
up there
right now.
Who's the lifeguard? We'll do that after the
afterwards,
podcast. After the podcast. When it comes to your own health, you've had a few very tough years. How is surfing positively impacted your own well-being?
The whole reason why I wanted to build something like this is because I inherently knew that being in and around water is really good for me. And it's something that through talking to other friends, close friends, we discussed it. It was like, yeah, absolutely. Like having something like this close to us would be incredible. So we got this place built, but you know, it was freaking stressful getting this place built. It was a lots of sort of ups and downs.
Like, look at it.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing.
I mean, to say that you created this, it's mind-boggling.
Even the other day when we went surfing about a month or so ago, I'd just sit there, just in between when the waves are pushing, just that moment in time where you just look back and go, I can't believe we've done it. I literally can't believe we've done it. Properly is a team effort, but having that initial vision and seeing it come to reality is still completely mind-blowing. Ironically, mind-blowing is the word. In 2020, I had a massive stroke, completely out of the blue. I was just playing hockey at the time. I felt totally just generally fine, but I was quite stressed out at work, and then just suddenly had a stroke whilst playing hockey.
And that is completely terrifying.
Yeah, it was really fundamentally terrifying. Your life properly flashes in front of you going, as soon as I realised that I was having a stroke, the fear of God went through me going...
What was that realisation in that moment?
In that moment, I knew I felt a little bit weird just at the start of the hockey match. It was only about 3 or 4 minutes in, and then somebody hit the ball to me, and I normally would just stop the ball, but it went flying past me. Like timing was off. I thought, that's a bit weird. I normally can stop the ball. And then I was sort of running back. We were sort of attacking and going down the other side of the pitch. And I just noticed that my hockey stick, my right hand was I couldn't grip my hockey stick properly. I thought, that's really weird. And it's like pins and needles. I thought, well, this is really strange. So I just was stood in the middle of the hockey pitch and just suddenly felt like I was watching myself from about a meter behind me, watching me panic. But it was really strange. I was watching it from behind me. Absolute terror going, something's really, really not right. So I ran to the side into the dugout. And then everyone's like, Nick, get back on the pitch. Why have you come off? Are you injured? And I was just going, Nick, just get back. You okay? I was going, And then and suddenly realized I was wanting to tell people stuff and I couldn't get it out of my mouth.
Could you say anything?
That's all I could do is just go,
Wow.
And then somebody behind me just suddenly said, oh my God, I think he's having a stroke. And then as soon as he said, I knew exactly that was what's going on. The loss of grip in my hands and then my inability to speak. And yeah, oh my God, I was just utterly, utterly terrified. And had a succession of problems there, like paramedics never came because I wasn't deemed to be urgent enough. And then I had to... Because of like young, fit and healthy, or relatively young, fit and healthy, still in my hockey kit, unfortunately, the sort of consultants in A&E didn't properly take me seriously. They thought I'd had some kind of nervous breakdown. And then eventually they then managed to get me into the MRI. And then they found that I had a big blood clot in my brain.
That is absolutely petrifying.
Yeah, it was.
So a complete out-of-body experience. You've pulled out and you're literally watching yourself.
That's so weird. Yeah.
Yet no ability to communicate.
Yeah.
When you were off the pitch, were you able to control your limbs or did you lose all sense?
No, just my right hand was still not great. Everyone just got me to the clubhouse, told me to just lie down and just kept asking me questions. I couldn't answer them. And yeah, I think there were a couple of medics came along who had been playing in the match before and they said, oh yeah, I think this guy's had a stroke. So the beauty of it is, I mean, that was right on the cusp of lockdown with the pandemic. In a weird way, timing-wise, if I was going to have a stroke, we had to close this whole place down, go into furlough. Once I was able to sort of move around better and I got my strength back, this place, I was able to come here. I actually started to clean the lake. It's a big lake to clean, but started to clean the lake.
Just a little bit.
But started to build up algae at the bottom of the lake bed. So I thought, oh, that's really sad. I'm going to just go and get some brushes and start cleaning. And yeah, cleaned this entire lake over about 2 or 3 months. But I realized that every single day that I was in and around the water, I was feeling better. And genuinely, my speech was coming back because I wasn't putting myself under so much pressure to talk to people because there was nobody to talk to. Just being in and around water felt really restorative, like I was getting better, like I hadn't been before.
When you say you came down here, you started helping with the cleaning of the lake.
Yeah.
You neglected to mention actually how bad the stroke was.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to your speech, take me back to the stroke for a minute. We have the moment of realization you've just had a stroke.
Yeah.
In that instance, what's going on?
I mean, personally, like I said, just complete fear, but realizing that I might not be able to talk again was probably the biggest thing for me. You know, realizing that maybe I'm not going to be able to talk to my family again, talk to my friends again, was really, really frustrating. I think like real frustration, but also again, that real fear that comes through with that. I was able to start to pull together some words after a week or so, and then just slowly through speech therapy and all the rest of it, was able to start rebuilding my language. You know, even as I speak to you now, you won't feel it, but everything's slightly delayed from how quickly I would normally be able to process stuff, because everything I've got to, it's like speaking a second language where you're fluent in something, but it just, everything has to, I feel it, but you probably won't, but I can feel that I'm having to think about the words just before I say it, which is super weird. But that whole processing that goes on in your brain is, it has to work out a new way of doing it, because fundamentally those connections have died. And so everything's just got to bypass, and by working on it, it gets quicker and quicker and quicker.
That must be incredibly frustrating at times.
Yeah.
In that instance of all of that going on, you've got this, you've created this. Mm-hmm. We go into lockdown. You've also got a beautiful family. Mm-hmm. So for them to contend with the fact that their dad has just had a stroke, mm-hmm. yet you're still back here trying to clean up this giant lake. Like, how big is this for those listening to the audio?
It's going
to
be the equivalent of 5 football pitches.
Small cleanup mission,
yeah,
then.
Exactly.
We just had a stroke, first thing you do is essentially go back to work.
Yeah, about a month later, once this place was completely shut down, and I said, well, actually, I need to go back. What was beautiful about that whole time was, actually, we built this place and we opened it like literally straight away. Like the next day we opened it. In a weird way, had never managed to love it and enjoy the space and the place before allowing the whole world to come and visit it.
Yeah.
So it was actually quite a beautiful time where we were able to, myself and my kids and my wife, were able to come here and enjoy the space a little bit, so that when we came out of lockdown, it felt like we'd loved it a bit more ourselves before sharing it. And of course, when we came out of lockdown, you know, everybody's been absolutely trapped. A bit like, no, honestly, felt like the world has gone through that sort of stroke where you can't communicate to each other, you weren't able to get outside, you weren't able to get into nature. And I think it was like the perfect time to then be able to open it all back up, because people were hankering after just connecting to each other again, being out in nature, being able to exercise more, actually spending money on experiences rather than just buying stuff for the sake of it. So actually, you know, we had an amazing year once we were back out of lockdown, because suddenly this is something that people wanted to, like, fundamentally a healthy place, very positive place to bring smiles again after what's been a couple of
horrendous
tricky years.
Yeah. And I can imagine even more so now, your connection with this space is so positive because it helped you through that recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, to me, it was like, well, I know how good this has been to me. What we need to do is, first of all, really understand what Blue Health is about. Let's go and do a deep dive into what that actually is and what research is out there. How could we actually use this as the most amazing laboratory for Blue Health? And then how can we share that? How can we make sure that we are breaking down barriers for people who wouldn't necessarily afford it, or for cultural reasons can't come here, or geographical distance? Like, how can we get people to love these spaces here, but also other places? That connection to water is so incredibly important. It's about how can we break down those barriers for access for all.
Wave makers only past this point.
Yeah, okay. You're allowed.
I'm allowed. Today we are a wave maker. Feeling very privileged right now. This is the real behind the scenes access.
Yeah.
When it comes to sharing your love and that passion, it is insane to hear it quite literally from your mouth in how it has helped you. Mm-hmm. You've also been making some big waves in accessibility for those who maybe can't stand on 2 feet. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so right back to the design phase of building this is that, you know, I've been working with what we call the adaptive community, or the disabled community who surf, since day one. So we made sure that this whole space and place is designed for accessibility. So all the ramp access, so that people in wheelchairs would be able to easily get in.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah,
before.
Exactly. So it's just all been designed, making sure that we've got proper changing places for people to get changed. And we work with an amazing company, Finisair, who've made suits, so it's easier to access with zips. where it's really tricky to get, particularly if you've got paralyzed limbs. It's really hard to get a paralyzed limb through a wetsuit. So actually having zippers on there is really revolutionizes that.
Have you been a part of installing that process?
Yeah, from day one.
So that's nuts, because getting into a wetsuit is so hard.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Especially this time of year, you are like 4 or 5 mil.
Yeah.
I can't get my legs through it.
It's really hard. So, and if you've got a paralyzed limb, which you can't move through the actual suit, it's impossible. So yeah, having zip right up just makes it so much easier. So, you know, that's a good example of things that we've done, go right, well, what are the barriers and how can we just get rid of those barriers? Cultural barriers are a really good example as well. Again, working with Finisterre, we designed this sort of sea suit. They designed the sea suit. We use this as a test bed so that we could have people who, for cultural reasons, maybe they're Muslims and they have to wear hijabs or some kind of dress because they can't show their outline of their body. So you create something which means that they can get into the water. So there's no reason not to, whereas they normally wouldn't. Making sure that we do have female coaches so that they can get in the water with them. That's really, really important. Otherwise, they can't come here. So, look, you know, where are the barriers and how can we break those down? That's what we're about.
That is so special.
Yeah, that's cool.
It feels really evident that you genuinely absolutely love this space and want to share it on a larger level. Now, people have come here from all over the world. Does it feel like a pinch me moment when you've got some of the world's best surfers flying in from the States, Hawaii, Australia, New Zealand to come and check this place out?
Absolutely does. But without being weird, I equally get just as much enjoyment as a local person who vowed they would never ever come here. They thought that I was probably the devil incarnate for trying to build this place, and them coming with their grandchildren and having a great time. That gives me just as much of a buzz, where you can see that you deliver something with care, try and be as trustworthy person to be able to show that, you know, what we're trying to do is something that is wholly positive, not negative. And it's so great when people come round to understanding and trusting you that actually what you're trying to deliver, you have delivered. That to me is just as cool as
that is,
yeah. But equally, I love it when, you know, pro surfers who I've only seen on TV come here, and that's equally mind-blowing.
And
it's a bit of everything.
The pro snowboard posse as well.
Oh, amazing, yeah.
Show our faces.
Exactly.
I like to call myself the frog on water. Talk to me a little bit about your own relationship with wellness when it comes to working out. How do you install a routine in what some might consider quite a crazy role that you currently have?
There's two reasons that I want to try and surf as much as possible. One is because obviously I love it and it's really good for me, both physically and mentally, to get in here, but also to understand a lot more about the community that we've built here. Now, there are people coming here regularly and being able to get the feedback, and, you know, they often say, oh, it'd be great if we could tweak this or tweak that, and get those conversations going so that there's a real connection between the management and the people who've built the place and can influence future with the customers on the ground. And also just fundamentally share the stoke. Like, what's lovely again, and that's not why I do it, but I love coming surfing with general public sessions because I get the good feedback. You get a few grumbles. Mainly it's people going, thank you for building this, which to me just means I go to bed at night feeling like I've achieved what I wanted to set out to do.
Yeah, because I know the few times I've been down here, and last time I was here, I was lucky enough to spend a bit of time with you in the water.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible to see. Obviously, you have access to this place within reason as much as you'd like.
Yep.
But it's mad to see how it can still light up your face.
Yeah, it is amazing. And more recently, I've been bringing the kids here more, particularly my eldest. Being able to share that with my kids is just equally, you know, one of the highlights. They were quite reticent the first couple of years because they felt like a bit of pressure on them that they should be a really, really good surfer really young. But actually, you know, I've never pushed them into it at all. But
the question now at this point though,
mm-hmm.
who's better, you or your kids? Are they chasing your tail? Because I know you're quite handy on a surfboard.
I'm all right. My eldest, unfortunately, has taken over.
Has he surpassed? How do you feel about that?
No, I'm pretty proud of it, really.
That's nice.
Seeing the smile on his face when he's, you know, caught a big barreling wave with his mates is pretty insane. The other two will be following really, really fast because, yeah, they've suddenly really got it. It's got into their blood now.
Yeah. How would you describe that feeling? So for somebody who has never surfed before, what is it, that sort of addictive nature? Because in snowboarding, I remember the first handful of times, I instantly became hooked and it's all I thought about. And there's that feeling of progression and excitement. How would you describe standing up on a wave for the first time?
Most surfers can remember the first time they caught a wave, but certainly for me, it's the feeling like you've managed to tame something that is wild. It's probably similar to, I don't know, if you grabbed a wild horse, caught a wild horse and jumped onto its back for the first time. It feels like something incredibly wild. You've managed to sort of not tame, but be properly connected to it. And then being able to start to ride the wave, it just feels like you've conquered something that you would probably think you're never going to be able to do. You know, some people pick it up really, really quickly, but the majority of us, it takes time and it's that falling on it. To me, it's a lovely analogy for life where if you just fall over time and time and time again, but just keep getting back up to your feet, that eventually you will conquer something. And then that makes the victory even sweeter because it was so hard to do. And what's great here is that we've got people coming here who probably have never had that feeling like they've conquered something, and being able to do that for the first time here and see the smile on their faces and that sense of achievement just takes you to a different level of possibility. I'm no hardcore businessman. Anybody looking at me and knowing me before would go, that's impossible to achieve. But actually, to me, this shows that with tenacity, a clear vision, a little bit of naivety as well, anything's possible, particularly if you do it as a team. This isn't just, you know, it's my vision, but this is teamwork that has allowed this to happen. And I think that's just, again, a really good analogy for life about how important that cohesion of community can get stuff built. And to me, that brings hope. You can then extrapolate that across society, across the world, looking at the challenges that we've got out in the world, is actually, it takes a community to make change, a positive change.
And there really is such a positive community here.
Yeah.
Eventually, you've got your regulars that come down, and it's a space of connectivity. And I think that's the beautiful thing about surfing, whether you're at a beach, in the ocean, or whether you're here, it's a beautiful way of connecting with people. Because also surfing, you could see it as a solo sport, but actually it's always lovely to be around the people out the back, because you've got to look out for each other as well, because there's no doubt about it, there is an element of danger, and you need to have the utmost respect to surf within the elements.
Yeah.
And even that takes an element of connectivity.
Absolutely. I think that's the bit that I've been most surprised at, is fundamentally this is something that is, you know, man-made, fake, artificial, whatever you want to call it. I was worried as to whether this would tick the boxes for the sort of hardcore people down at the beach. You know, is this going to be something that they will actually come to and enjoy? That was, to me, another moment of feeling really, really pleased by what we've created, when a whole load of people from Porthtowan and Porthleven, down in the deepest dark of Cornwall, some people from Southwest Wales, where I know they're like really core community.
Yeah,
they've been there forever. It's like the birthplace of UK surfing. And come here and going, oh,
this,
my goodness,
legit.
This is brilliant. So much good fun. Because, of course, it's only good surf probably 30% of the time in the ocean. So for them to come here and have an amazing experience at the same time is, it was so great to get that feedback.
And it also, as a sort of intermediate level surfer myself, it just elevates the opportunity for progression. Because instead of, you know, getting, say, 3 waves in 2 hours, how many waves are there in an hour here?
Well, we have up to 1,000 waves an hour. So,
what?
Yeah,
it's a crazy amount. The possibilities are endless.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you probably get the same amount of waves in an hour here that you would in about 4 hours at the ocean, without having to do that whole driving down there. Obviously, the cost of petrol and the consumption of petrol. Actually, coming here, having that, this as your new local spot is, yeah, that's why people are coming back here time and time again, 2 or 3 times a week for some people.
If I was to give you the keys to freedom to go on a 4-wheeled, Michelin-fueled adventure, you can take 3 people with you, where would your ultimate surfing road trip be?
surfing road trip. I'd definitely take my three kids.
And leaving the wife behind.
I know. You said it's only three.
It's only
but
three.
I will meet her at the final destination.
Okay, nice.
So
nice.
I think that's all right.
Okay.
And we probably would go to South Africa because beautiful coastline, amazing surfing there. It's where my wife was born in Cape Town. So we can meet her there, go along that whole East Coast. In fact, go right up to probably Mozambique, where I've got some friends who run this incredible charity, Surfers Not Street Children, there.
Right.
So we would probably go out there, something for us to enjoy ourselves, but also something that will help with the charity and get involved in what they're doing as well. So that, to me, would be the perfect trip, and bring my three kids because we love having adventures together. We've had some really cool surf trips all together before, and yeah,
and
going somewhere like that would be amazing.
They can keep you on your toes, right?
Exactly.
Fit,
keep me honest.
Sharp.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Ready to push the boundaries.
Yeah.
Nick, we like to ask all of our guests on the Monday Mile podcast what their relationship is like with Monday. Do you like a Monday?
I do like a Monday. I used not to when I had my previous job because there was a real difference between work life and home life. But I love Mondays now over the last sort of 5 years or so since this has been open, because actually the two completely blend now. I don't really see a difference between my home life and work life. And it's not in a bad way, because I'm bringing my work home with me. But actually, this place is an extension of me. Like, everything that goes well in this place or anything that goes wrong in this place is an extension to me. And a lot of personality has gone into this place. I love Mondays more than ever because it's just another day rather than something that I probably used to slightly dread. What I love is Sunday nights now, where I don't have that dread anymore, because actually Monday's cool.
That must be such a good feeling.
Yeah, it's the best. It is the best.
This place is so special. Not only is it creating memories for you, but so many other people have traveled from all four corners of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sharing that experience with them. It is groundbreaking. That's the only
way. It's the best feeling. It's the best feeling.
It's so cool. It's honestly such a privilege to know you.
Thanks.
And to have had this opportunity to walk with you. My last question is, do you have a life motto or a quote that you live by that you can share with our listeners?
I'm going to give two. One is the one that my dad always said, is don't let the buggers get you down. The second one, I guess, is just that it's a John Lennon quote, is they say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. It takes a team to make these places get built. Yeah. And as much as you might have an absolute will and desire, you have to bring people along with you to get stuff like this done.
It's all about the people you surround yourself by.
Exactly.
I know you've got a big dream and you continue to dream.
Yeah.
So on that, can you give us a little insight as to what might be coming?
Yeah, I guess any entrepreneur or people who are looking at new businesses and looking through life through a different lens, I guess that sort of more visionary side of things, is always ask one question, which is, you know, what if? What if the joy of how people walk away from this place, what if they're where they live, the places that they live, the communities they live in, actually brings this kind of joy back into where they live every day? It saddens me a little bit when people come here, have great time, and probably within a couple of hours or sometimes a couple of days, they're starting to sort of sink back down from that excitement they've got. And that's normal to have that sort of ups and downs, the ebb and tide of surfing and what it makes you feel. But wouldn't it be great if we actually created communities, created homes and communities which actually got much more blue health embedded into it? Can see where, you know, particularly in the UK, where lots of people are really tightly bound together in housing and don't have access to good open space, green spaces, as well as blue spaces. So I'm working with this amazing company and team to start reinventing, like, what would that look like if we were to build communities based around blue health? So that's the new mission. It's so, so exciting, because you
that
can
mission
reach,
is yeah, well can, underway as well,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Are we allowed to give a little nod to the upcoming potential site, or is that under wraps?
It's under wraps at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we can leave it at that.
Yeah, it's okay. Very exciting.
That is very exciting. Wow,
yeah.
I feel like I know really big news now. That is incredibly exciting. Monday Mile listeners, you heard it right here. Big things are coming, Nick. It's been such a pleasure
Thanks,
to
Amy.
Walk and talk with you today. in your home. The question is, are you going for a surf today?
Yeah, why not?
Of course. Yeah. Monday Mile listeners, you know what to do. Do make sure you subscribe. The audio drops at 12 a.m. for the early risers. So make sure you tune in and have an absolutely wicked week.
I don't really see a difference between my home life and work life. And it's not in a bad way, because I'm bringing my work home with me. But actually, this place is an extension of me. Like, everything that goes well in this place or anything that goes wrong in this place is an extension to me. And a lot of personality has gone into this place. I love Mondays more than ever, because it's just another day rather than something that I probably used to slightly dread. What I love is Sunday nights now, where I don't have that dread anymore, because actually Monday's cool.
That must be such a good feeling.
Yeah, it's the best. It is the best.
This place is so special. Not only is it creating memories for you, but so many other people have traveled from all four corners of the world. Mm-hmm. And you're sharing that experience with them. It is groundbreaking.
It's the best feeling. It's the best feeling.
It's so cool. It's honestly such a privilege to know you.
Thanks.
And to have had this opportunity to walk with you. My last question is, do you have a life motto or a quote that you live by that you can share with our listeners?
I'm going to give two. One is the one that my dad always said, is don't let the buggers get you down. The second one, I guess, is just that it's a John Lennon quote, is they say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. It takes a team to make these places get built. Yeah. And as much as you might have an absolute will and desire, you have to bring people along with you to get stuff like this done.
It's all about the people you surround yourself by.
Exactly.
Right? I know you've got a big dream and you continue to dream.
Yeah.
So on that, can you give us a little insight as to what might be coming?
Yeah, I guess any entrepreneur or people who are looking at new businesses and looking through life through a different lens, I guess that sort of more visionary side of things, is always ask one question, which is, you know, what if? What if the joy of how people walk away from this place, what if they're where they live, the places that they live, the communities they live in, actually brings this kind of joy back into where they live every day? It saddens me a little bit when people come here, have great time, and probably within a couple of hours or sometimes a couple of days, they're starting to sort of sink back down from that excitement they've got. And that's normal to have that sort of ups and downs.
Yeah,
the
highs and lows.
Yeah, the ebb and tide of surfing and what it makes you feel. But wouldn't it be great if we actually created communities, created homes and communities, which actually got much more blue health embedded into it. Can see where, you know, particularly in the UK, where lots of people are really tightly bound together in housing and don't have access to good open space, green spaces, as well as blue spaces. So I'm working with this amazing company and team to start reinventing, like, what would that look like if we were to build communities based around blue health? So that's the new mission. It's so, so exciting, because
that
can reach,
mission is underway as well, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Are we allowed to give a little nod to the upcoming potential site, or is that under wraps?
It's under wraps at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we can leave it at that.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
That is very exciting. Wow, yeah. I feel like I know really big news now. That is incredibly exciting. Monday Mile listeners, you heard it right here. Big things are coming, Nick. It's been such a pleasure walk and talk with you today in your home. The question is, are you going for a surf today?
Yeah, why not?
Of course. Yeah. Monday Mile listeners, you know what to do. Do make sure you subscribe. The audio drops at 12 a.m. for the early risers. So make sure you tune in and have an absolutely wicked week.